So did you see the meteor in Russian skies today?
The one that like that hit, or the one that like passed by us?
The one that hit.
That was pretty crazy. It injured like over 1,000 people.
Yeah, I don't know if they were all injured, but to have it affect that many is pretty interesting.
Well, like it was because like glass broke out and they got cut from the glass and things like that.
Oh, shit, I just realized something.
No warp core? That's better.
We'll have to splice in the Wilhelm scream.
Yeah.
So, they were comparing it to an event in 1908.
Yeah, that was a pretty crazy one.
That shook the ground and, like, leveled trees. Yeah. And they've recently been looking at a lake in that area that they're thinking might be a crater. Like, it has a weird seismic feature in the bottom that seems to reflect.
Global Disaster 2013 had a video just a couple hours ago get released, and it's got, like, the crater that this meteor that we're talking about actually left, and it's, like, all still burning, and it's, like, a hole in the ice. It's pretty
holy shit.
Looking. Yeah.
Well, like, I was looking at the size comparison and estimated against this previous one, it's like half the size.
Well, I heard it was like 10 tons today. Like a 10-ton meteorite hit.
That sounds about right. And the one that supposedly hit in 1908 was about the size of the one that just passed us today.
Right. Do you know that missed us by 15 minutes?
Ouch.
Yeah.
It's really weird, because, like, it passes really close to us, and then we completely change its orbit. Earth does.
Mm-hmm. It'll whip around, go a totally different way.
And I think we're going to be seeing it again in, like, 2019, I want to say? Or 2015? I don't know.
I think so. I think there's one that's coming up close, well, relatively close, that's supposed to be, like, you know, another really close call. We're not quite sure how far away it's going to be, but it'll definitely be within us and the moon kind of thing.
I did, I looked up a bunch of the asteroids that they've been looking at, and none of them are slated to come anywhere near impact danger, but some of them are definitely close enough to be some interesting events. Also, the orbit of the one that just passed through our geosynchronous orbit or whatever is almost identical to Earth, just sort of offset by a few degrees.
Wild.
So, like, where one ellipse has its apogee or perigee, the other is, like, 20 degrees off or something like that. So very nearly the same as Earth's orbit. That's why it crosses, like, 4 times or whatever.
Man, that's wild.
Hopefully, we'll get rid of it. Because if it sticks like that, I mean, it's inevitable eventually, with enough rotations.
Yeah, just a matter of time. That's why the universe is just this huge clock on some gigantic alien's wrist. Or whatever.
Whoa.
They might call a risk. Wrist.
Maybe they call it a risk.
Yeah, maybe.
They're like, it's 10 to my risk.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Ooh.
Forgot the fucking sound effects.
Ooh. So I think there might have been...
Prepared.
I think there might have been two... Well, I don't know. I'm kind of confused about the whole situation. I'm not sure if there was two meteorites that hit or one hit, one passed by close, but if there was two that hit, there's definitely still the one that passed by close.
It's not a meteorite until it's actually hitting Earth.
Right, otherwise it's a
It's an asteroid.
Oh. But, okay, so what is it called when it... a meteorite that didn't hit the ground. It's called a meteorite because it hit the ground, but is that a meteor? A meteor doesn't hit the ground?
I think you're right. A meteorite would refer specifically to the rock.
Yeah.
So, it would have to survive impact in order to actually be a meteorite.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it's just a chunk of an asteroid.
Mm-hmm. Little grains of sand.
Yeah, that are, like, 10 times brighter than the brightest fireworks we have.
Yeah.
The one, the video I saw from the one in Russia, it like left a streak of fiery explosion wake in the sky for a few minutes.
Really cool.
Man, it would be weird if you, like, your window broke because of something falling out of the sky.
Yeah. This huge sonic boom just shattering all the glass. There was a couple of buildings that got fucked up, too.
Whoa. I figure it must be connected to asteroid 2012 DA14.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was thinking, like, maybe it was, like, a trailing kind of rock.
Yeah, like, wouldn't it be... like, wherever it originated from, it would be set on its course by, like, an impact, right? Mm-hmm. So there would be, like, debris in its wake. Oh. Some of it would get carried with the asteroid, and some of it would... sort of be a cloud.
I was thinking, like, on its journey through the stars, it maybe collected some space debris, and what we saw falling down was just a piece of space debris from its journey.
It's more than possible.
Kind of like how we got the moon. Where did the moon come from? It's such a weird moon.
I think it's a literal planetoid. That, like,
a failed planet kind of thing? Like, it, if it had its own orbit, it would have been like Venus or something?
Sort of. Popular theory is that the asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter would have eventually condensed into a planet, but because of Jupiter's constant dragging on that whole orbit, it just breaks the pieces apart, and big enough chunks that do stick together get pulled apart again by tidal forces. So it just sort of grinds down into chunks that have very little chance of ever gravitating toward each other.
Hmm.
But at one point in the solar system's evolution, there would have been hundreds, maybe, of planetoids. You know, stuff about the size of the average of, like, Jupiter or Saturn's moons.
No.
And they smash together and smash together and smash together. But towards the end there, you'd have several dominant bodies, and then a whole bunch of these little potential planets that could only ever become a planet if they all smashed together in the same place.
Kind of like what we got now with the asteroid belt, right?
Kinda, yeah, but kinda. More like dwarf planets.
Mm.
Like your, you know, like Ceres is one, right?
Pluto.
I don't know. I want to say it's a planet still.
Yeah, it's because that's what we were taught in school.
Yeah, but there's some kind of romantic notion about that, too.
Mm-hmm. The universe just... or the solar system doesn't look right without Pluto.
But like I said on probably one of our pilot episodes or something, if a dwarf planet isn't a planet, then a dwarf person isn't a person? I don't think so.
It's a little planet.
Exactly. And it's just as valid as any size planet. And it can do anything they can do.
Yeah. Even support life.
Maybe especially support life. We haven't, you know, we only have a sample of just Earth's life, which all descends from some common ancestor.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's, you know, maybe life is easier to evolve in some place with low gravity or high gravity.
Yeah.
Or maybe there's a sweet spot.
What is it?
Oh shit, I fucked it up.
It's still not working.
All right, try it now. That's appropriate.
Okay, so what's the...
I'm simply saying that life finds a way.
Yeah, see, now, Dr. Ian Malcolm was a... not just a theoretician, a chaotician. Chaotician. He believes in chaos theory. Chaos. And,
Or the building of a dam.
Exactly.
The beavers, man. What about the beavers?
Your precious American beavers.
They're not American beavers or Canadian beavers. They're just beavers.
We're on the Canadian side of the river, which means you don't have any jurisdiction over here.
Oh, God damn it, is he right about that?
G.I. Jones character Tom Selleck. the mustache is so full and thick. That's what he said.
Yeah.
Oh, conky.
It sounds funnier in a regular voice.
Ricky!
So that's one, like, it's hard to get Trailer Park Boys in any legitimate format in the United States.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Even though they're just in Canada.
Yeah. Well, like, it's on Netflix, I think.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
That's the only workaround, because...
No, because that's where I saw it. I saw it on Netflix.
Like, the DVDs are, like, $70 or something for a DVD.
Well...
Fuck. Import.
Inflation.
So I was wondering... The moon is tidally locked to the Earth. And someday, supposedly, the rotational energy of the Earth will get converted entirely into its orbit, and it will become tidally locked. So one side faces the sun, and one side is dark. Forever.
That's kind of a disturbing thought. But I heard that the moon is slowly... drifting away from us, because, like, we don't have enough gravity to hold on to it.
That could be.
So in, like, 6 years, we won't have a total eclipse of the sun.
Whoa. 6 years, though?
I think so.
That seems fast.
It's, like, perfect right now, you know? Like, when it happens, it's just so perfect. And that is nowhere else.
Well, so say that perfection goes away. And we, like, only the dark side of... Well, hang on a sec. Would you still have the moon if you had one side of the Earth day and one side night?
Well,
because it can still orbit. It's just facing the same direction the whole time.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It still orbits. So we would still have... It'd be like the sun... It would be more like the sun is chasing the moon.
Okay.
Or
so
something along those
lines. I guess the scenario...
No, there wouldn't be any sun.
I'm trying to come up with would be... one where the planet rotates at exactly the same speed as its tidally locked moon orbits.
Oh, so it's like...
So, like, the moon is in geosynchronous orbit.
So it's more like a compass pointer.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, so everything's in a neat little line.
You could definitely navigate by it, because it would never move relative
to
the Earth.
It would always point outward.
But that would also mean that the tides are locked into a certain spot, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you think, after a while, like, a mountain would build up there? Like, an extra big spot?
Well, if we become tidally locked, we wouldn't have a magnetosphere, right? I think?
No, we still could, because there's nothing that... The magnetosphere comes from the...
spinning
core. The dynamo of the metals and stuff in our core.
Yeah.
So... we could
okay.
still have that while we're tidally locked, definitely.
I would imagine that having the sun on one side of the Earth would pull any water that might be left at that time. I assume that... I'm going to go ahead and assume that water's still here in this scenario.
So you think we would have to deal with sun tides?
Yeah, well, not a tide, but just the sun's pull, like a mountain of water would form on that one side of the Earth.
Yeah, so like there would be a like a topology to the oceans.
Yeah.
Which, as I understand it, there already is. It's just not very extreme, and it goes away after a while. But, like, imagine piloting your boat uphill.
Would we still call it a hill? Would we have to come up with some new terminology? Let's do that right now. What would be the term for going uphill in a boat? Only the hill is made of water and not dirt.
Full steam ahead.
Full steam, 45 degrees.
Oh, there you go. So it's kind of like riverboat shit where you're like, oh, it's only 2 feet deep here. Mark Twain. That's where his name comes from. Mark one. Because you have a bunch of weird little orphan children that just live on the boat and do your lackey work. So they hang over the sides when the sandbars get real shallow, and they hang over the sides with sticks and they're like poking the bottom of the river being like, okay, 2 feet. 3 feet, 1 foot.
Hang on, we need to go back. We can't go any further.
So then if you're going uphill, water, and there's no place to... So the weird little kids are hanging over the side of the boat with some kind of
prod.
Level, like to measure how steep the water is.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah. But then, you know, you might have to worry about, like, mountains in the hill of water, too.
Yeah, because...
We don't know where it would be locked.
If in just the moon was affecting the tide, like...
Oh, that would be wild,
like,
too.
Like, it's just locked, so the day and night is passing, but the tide is permanent for wherever the moon is.
Yeah.
Then you could potentially have, like, a dual tide situation where you have, you know, the sun making the giant water mountain...
So the Earth,
and then the moon's like making this crypto dome bulge on the side.
Yeah.
Sort of a bubble.
Yeah. It just sort of follows it around because the majority of the water stays.
Well, oh shit. So like if you exploited the principles at work in surfing, could you just sort of achieve perpetual motion on this infinite tide, opposite of a tide pool thing?
Well, does it get hung up on any land, do you think?
That would just depend on the geography of the time, right?
I guess so, yeah. Huh.
So... Okay, so what we gotta do is find an ocean planet.
Yeah.
Then we put a whole bunch of buoys with electromagnets on them that are being super cooled by liquid helium.
Mm-hmm.
So they're super magnetic, super conductive, and they're all over the place. So then when the tide pulls up on any given one of them, it instills it with a bunch of potential energy that the other ones are connected to via the magnetic field.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it comes back down, you know, it's dragging, changing position in a magnetic field, set that up to induce voltage, infinite power.
Mm. Nice.
So I guess a real-life Death Star would actually be made of water.
Hmm.
Right?
Yeah, and then it wouldn't have a hole to fly into and blow up.
Exactly. You'd have to make submarine X-Wings. And everybody knows that a spaceship is designed to withstand pressures between 0 and 1 atmosphere. Which is a lot different than going under the ocean. What, like in the Marianas Trench, it's like hundreds of atmospheres, thousands of atmospheres.
Yeah. And life still finds a way.
Without sunlight.
Mm-hmm.
So like this life down there, it uses bacteria to do some kind of sulfur reaction with the volcanic shit.
Yeah, the volcanic tubes down there that just vent. And like it's like a city in the desert. It's really wild to see a video coming up on one.
with like thousands of crabs and worms and shit.
Yeah, and they're all just like this thriving little community, just super happy, living in the dark.
Just crabs in general, like the most mundane crabs, are a trip and a half.
Like their blood is like thick, like flesh almost.
Because it's so cold down there, so it's just like brine.
Yeah, I think, but I think it had a different purpose. Like when it, if it got into a fight and like lost a limb or something, it wouldn't bleed out.
It would just sort of gel up.
Yeah, it's like it cauterizes real fast.
Well, and like the only reason it's going to get into a fight is because there are literally thousands of them crawling over the ocean floor, mm-hmm. like on top of each other in some cases, like in crab season.
Yeah.
Imagine if there was a land equivalent to that. Like, okay, it's April, so 10,000 spiders are going to come out of everywhere.
I've seen some videos of, like, little red crabs. I think it was down in Australia. Like, there was just thousands and thousands of little red crabs.
The ones that, they go up on the roads because they have to get up this mountain to spawn and then get back down.
Yeah.
And it's like, you see the road and there's, like, two pink treads down the whole thing because you can't avoid them.
Mm-hmm. They're everywhere. It's just a sea of pink.
If I remember right, they also don't have their shells developed at that time. So they're like squishy. Sort of like little bean bags.
Hello. That'd be fun.
I'm simply saying that life finds a way.
What if, like, I mean, so we do a lot of crab fishing or crabbing. Anyway, we take a lot of the population down as humans. What if just we weren't around? Like, populations of everything else would just explode. Right?
In a way, we kind of see some of that, like, in the animals that we usually hunt. Because
nature's found a way to keep the population alive and strong.
Well, pretty much, and it was through supermarkets. Like,
yeah,
there's nobody I know that homesteads in this town. And I mean, I'm sure there's a few, but largely, hunting is a recreational thing.
Yeah.
So, you naturally have an explosion of it, or explosion of population in a lot of those prey animals. And like now we're seeing a lot of like weird this hoof deformity thing that like causes it to overgrow, so it looks like that Indian guy with the record for long fingernails, like it's all curled over and
wild.
Shit, and they can't use their feet very well. So those are the ones you kill and eat.
Yeah, that sounds good. You know, I heard something weird about something like that. Check this out. Like, we eat meat and things that was probably, you know, from a slaughterhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're eating this meat that came from a slaughterhouse that probably had this really horrific death. So the last thought in the meat, like the little piggy or whatever, you know, strung upside down and its throat being slit or whatever.
You're talking about the same thing that inspires, like, halal meat or halakha, depending on if you speak Arabic or Hebrew.
I'm not sure. Explain.
It has to do with, well, it specifically goes back to a thing in the Bible that talks about not eating meat cut off of a live animal, which I think is mainly like a cruelty kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But in essence, they, you know, they take their goat herd or whatever and they treat it as good as they can, and it's the medieval equivalent of grass-fed organic.
Oh yeah, okay.
And then I think there's also like a little prayer they say before they slit the animal's throat or something, but
like an Avatar?
Sure. I still haven't seen Avatar.
Oh, that's probably a good thing.
I figured fuck it. Like, if it's a gimmick for a 3D movie, like, you know. And it hasn't seemed to age well, at least in my view of public opinion of it.
Yeah. They are talking about an Avatar 2, I think.
Oh, well, naturally. Yeah. They would definitely do that. Especially after The Hobbit worked all the kinks out of the faster frame rate shit with its weird, like, bald cap seams or whatever.
I haven't seen that one yet.
Me neither, but I have heard that it just... It looks like everyone's in costume. There's something about the way the 48 frames per second work.
You know, I heard that everything looked kind of cartoony, like almost like with the Lord of the Rings, the little kids got a little bit too freaked out by the creatures, and so they kind of tried to almost Disney it out a little bit for the younger audience.
I wonder if Disney will pick up that property in the end. Like, just buy out the Tolkien estate. Well... Let's make a one-off, quickie, it's a spin-off of Borin the Dwarf, who grew up on the other side of Middle-earth, and it's basically Oliver Twist, but with magic. That's my idea, Disney. That's mine. Or maybe a better one is,
I'll buy that for a dollar.
Seriously.
Agreed.
$1. Yeah. Well, $10. What? $100.
100 big ones.
I bet I could do movie ideas all day long for $100 each.
Well, have you seen what's been coming out lately? I mean...
Okay. Adam Sandler...
is this dude
who gets a bunch of money and
plays around with it for a while and then figures out what he really wants is the girl from his childhood.
Shit, that's exactly what I was thinking. Which
that's
means exactly that cliche.
Well, yeah, that's exactly what would happen.
Yeah, that's... All I wanted this whole time was the girl next door.
And all the girl next door wanted was a lot of money.
Really? Wait, is that kind of what's going on in Pee-wee's Big Adventure? Or... The one... Is it Big Top Pee-wee where he gets the... Uh-huh. He, like, marries the girl from the freak show, right?
I think... I haven't seen that one in a long, long, long time.
Me neither.
I don't know about that one.
I remember him rescuing a bunch of animals from a burning pet shop.
I think that was in his biggest venture.
Yeah, because he had his bike, right?
Yeah,
and that's
his
what
bike
that
was stolen, or it lost its bike.
Stolen
somehow.
By Louis Anderson, or whatever. I don't think it's actually him.
That one guy that kind of looks like Louis Anderson.
That guy's scary.
Yeah.
But what is his name? I bet his name's really funny if I look it up. IMDb. Pee-wee Big Adventure. I need voice command for doing podcasts.
That'd be rad.
Computer. Oh, man. I just realized something. That's what we should do. Like, the problem with voice commanding computers is, like, how do you trigger them? Like, do you say computer? Okay, then it's always listening to computer. And what if you say computer in context? You just triggered it to do a whole bunch of gibberish.
So you
right?
gotta use a funny voice.
Yeah. You just adopt a new accent.
Yeah. Computer.
I would do Christopher Lambert. Computer. There can be only one.
You know, I thought it'd be... Oh, go ahead.
Mark Holton plays Francis Buxton in Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Not as much payoff as I thought it would be on the funny name.
But. Yeah. The character name is funnier.
His face is funnier. Looks like Andy Richter's long-lost bastard, even though he's probably older than Andy Richter. In 1958, I wonder... Better look up Andy Richter. We're just going to play the connection game again.
Uh,
born 1966. So, yes. I don't remember his name. Holton. Francis Buxton is older than Andy Richter. The more you know.
I thought it'd be kind of cool, you know, like the computer voice commands, to have it kind of like a, I don't know, you could probably do like a Bluetooth thing, where it's like a Bluetooth microphone. You could probably have a few of them throughout the house, just sort of listening for its cue.
You could implant one in your throat. You have to take your own pulse every time you want to check your email.
Well, you know, you could have it like synced up with like lights and, you know, maybe the thermostat and things like that. Just things around the house.
So that you can like think at the thermostat and it gets warmer.
You know, you say like computer dim lights in the room 25%.
Yeah. You have to do really weird percentile gradients in the future.
Or let's make it now.
Darker. Darker. You can't do that. You have to be reduced light level by 5.2%.
Reset to normal amounts.
Reset environmental controls to normal parameters.
You've raised the normal temperature in this room by 15 degrees. It is too hot.
Holy shit, you knew exactly what episode I was referring to.
That's Genesis.
Genesis.
From the seventh season.
Because Counselor Troy is in the midst of turning into some kind of frog man.
I think it's episode 18 or 24, 22, something like that.
It's real close to the end of the whole series. I think that has the best ending, too. It's like...
The paradox, the time paradox, or the Genesis?
Just
episode?
the whole wrap-up of TNG with Q being like, you're going to go out there and figure out new things about existence, and it's all existential and philosophical. Mm-hmm. Where, like, Deep Space Nine is like, well, Sisko's with the prophets now, which kind of means he's dead. Although he did say once he learns to manipulate time, he'll come back. Maybe yesterday? So, what?
So there's already a Sisko sitting back at the desk, waiting for it all just to go down.
Oh, that... is there? So the is... Oh, shit.
It happened, and then
because
Deep Space
since
Nine
it's,
just carries
it's not
on.
Linear, right? So he can come back whenever.
Yeah.
Even though we just saw him get killed with Gul Dukat.
He was already back at the Deep Space Nine, just, like, watching on his little monitor.
So, Cassidy Yates and Jake are sitting there staring at the wormhole, looking all sad, wondering how they're going to raise his bastard.
Right, right.
But he's in his office the whole time.
Right, and then when the credits roll, he walks out and is like, hey guys, what's up? But, you know, the credits are rolling, so we didn't see that.
With the weird double doors, it's like, pshh, pshh. I was going to try to do an impression of Sisko, and I just don't know where to begin.
But before he comes back, like, and sits at his desk, he goes into the future to save Data from saving Picard.
Right, right. He has to pluck Data out. Well, wait, hang on. If we're going to go that far, remember, anything that happens, happens. So, while Sisko is... in non-linear space, let's just call it the Cryptodome.
Yeah.
Data sacrifices himself to save Picard, which, I mean, actually in that movie, there's a lot worse shit going on than that. Like, didn't most of the population of Romulus get murdered with that weird radiation shit?
It's fine.
It was just the...
Just Romulans, they have no honor.
It was just the city council or whatever. The Romulus council.
The Senate.
Yeah, the Senate.
Because they're exactly Roman in every way. Right down to their name. Okay, so Data sacrifices himself for Picard after, you know, let's just say, close to a genocide. Or an attempted genocide. I mean, he was going to go around and just blast planets with that weird Warbird thing, the Picard clone.
Yeah.
And then, while that's happening, Voyager is just wrapped up, right? Because there's an Admiral Janeway in Nemesis.
Yeah. So it's sometime after Voyager got back.
And sometime after that, Spock invents his plot device to try to save Romulus or whatever and creates a black hole to reset time in J.J. Abrams' Trek.
Man, those things... Time paradoxes, man.
It's a necessary evil so that we can get Data back, is what I'm saying.
Oh, okay. Then I'm down for it.
Because the whole like plot arc of that one is old universe Spock trying to set the new universe to rights with his plot device. Red matter. And, well, okay, so he's going to succeed, naturally. Spock cannot fail. And there will be... everything will be set to rights, sort of. Like, there'll be token differences. Like, you always notice in a time travel story, like, when they set everything right, they're still, oh, you know, that necklace that you had engraved with my name says something different, or something else like that. That kind of shit.
Yeah.
Always something minor.
So there was no Picard clone, so Nemesis never happened?
That, and since that never happened, causality caused Data to, instead of be attached to the Enterprise, to get command of Voyager.
Yeah. And they never wind up there in the first place, so it's just another Star Trek The Next Generation.
Yeah, yeah.
And that would be great.
And they make it home, and somewhere around there, Sisko pops up. And Q's involved too.
Yeah. Those snappy fingers.
Because Q has to be like, what in the fuck did you do?
And then there's the time police.
Seriously, do you think Q would allow time to get reset? Because that fucks with his favorite laptop, Captain Picard.
No.
Like, who knows if Picard will even be born in J.J. Abrams' Trek?
The new Star Trek must be destroyed.
It will be. Time has to be restored to rights. You see, Star Trek actually fell back through time and is our history in the other direction.
Mm.
But by exposing it to us, it changed slightly so that we're actually guiding ourselves toward becoming that, rather than just blundering into it.
Oh, yeah, and in that, there was the Third World War, wasn't there?
Yeah, we haven't done that yet. Although, was that like 2015, 2017 in theirs?
I hope so.
Like, First Contact, they're at 2063, I think.
Man, that's a long-ass way away.
I'll be alive.
Download it into a computer somewhere, that's what I'm gonna do.
I'll make a warp ship, and what we won't have thought of in our little entertaining science fiction stories is the twins paradox. So I'll shoot myself out, like, to the nearest star and come back, and, like, 100 years will have passed. Even though it only took me a couple weeks or a couple months or something. I'll be like, whoops. Because if you travel 15 light years at the speed of light, 54,000 years pass on the Earth. For your 15.
Wow.
Whoops. But does that apply if you warp?
No.
Because when you warp, you're not actually...
You're folding space, aren't you?
You're sort of... Like, imagine a ball on a level piece of ground, and imagine you just tilted the whole frame so that the ball rolls. Relative to the ball, it's still flat.
Oh, okay. All right.
But
the contraction of space causes you to move. And you speed up and speed up and speed up until you seemingly pass the speed of light. But nothing's actually going faster. It's just sort of like your trip's getting shorter. In a way. That's why Han Solo was correct when he said the Kessel Run can be made in less than 12 parsecs. A parsec is what? Like 3 light years? Something like that?
I thought it was 20.
I think I'm confusing it with a furlong. That's 3 miles.
I don't know. I'm not sure.
Oh, Google, that's helpful. 1 parsec. 3.08 times 10 to the 16th meters. That's what? Quadrillion? It's like a million million.
I don't even know how to calculate that anymore, or to answer that. Huh.
Holy shit. 3.26 light years.
What's the numbers to pi? I know it's 3.1?
3.14159926 something.
See, that's why he's the brains of the outfit.
See, but I had the good sense to only memorize the digits that can actually be achieved in the universe. If you go too much smaller, you're down to smaller than, like, an atom.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I don't know what fucking circle you're measuring there.
Yeah.
In fact, like, when you get to down to the atom, circle has very little meaning. Like, which way is up?
That's a two-dimensional universe. There's that one-dimensional.
Both. Who knows? What? I wonder about that, like... Could there be, like, are the things that we see from, say, an electron just artifacts from it being, you know, two-dimensional or four-dimensional or six-dimensional? It's like, there's no way, if it just is affected by forces that are happening along its X and Y axis and not the Z, then it could seemingly pass through stuff or not be affected by stuff that should affect it if it were three-dimensional.
Are we getting down to like we're all made up of the same stuff the universe is made up of?
I don't know about that.
Okay, how about a good chunk of the universe is all made up of the same stuff?
What? It's all like
helium or hydrogen or something.
It's like 98% of it is hydrogen, I think. Or 98% of the observable mass.
Yeah.
And that's the main one. And we are all made of atoms. But we don't know yet. Maybe there is some kind of weird nuclear life form somewhere. That's a weird state of existence. Like, made of, like, I don't know, beta decaying metals.
So they're like life forms that actually live on the sun or stars or things like that. Star people?
Rock people. But what they're made out of, like, they have a certain ratio of radioactive elements in them, right? That's where the charge comes from that runs their seemingly electronic evolved systems. And then that's how they age. When the half-life decays to such a degree that there's no more power left, they just sort of freeze into gargoyles. Slow down. Like, is it the Never-Ending Story that has the big rock guy?
Yeah.
Oh, there's something else with the big rock guy, though, too.
There's
probably
a
been a million of them.
There's a lot of things, big rock guys.
Is there one in Labyrinth?
Or isn't there like a moving rock or a talking rock or something?
I don't remember. I don't know.
There is that one part where, like, the rock and the light looks just like David Bowie's face, and then it distort, like, the camera angle changes and it disappears, and around the corner comes David Bowie, and blah.
Whoa. I don't remember that one.
It's right around the Swamp of Eternal Stench. I think it's, like, right after they get through there when Hoggle's like, I've never had a friend. Come now, hog brain. What the fuck is up with David Bowie?
I don't know, man.
He has one weird eye because he got stabbed in the face with a compass. Like one of those drawing compasses.
Ouch. Really?
Yeah, that's why his pupil's blown out. Or at least that's the story.
When did that happen?
In childhood, like in grade school.
Wild.
Like, I guess he mouthed off to some kid or something, reached across the table, poink, right in his eye.
Holy shit. I thought kids today were kind of vicious.
Well, they used to make those things out of metal, too. Like, those were lethal fucking instruments.
I think I had metal ones when I was in elementary.
I definitely had access to them, but the ones that you get at Rite Aid or whatever were just, like, little plastic, stylish, goofy things. It has to be neon colors, because Lisa Frank. Remember that shit?
I remember the neon colors, yeah.
I got a folder with a neon pink harp seal on it. And then I got this other one. It's got a rhinoceros that's neon green and a giraffe with neon blue and pink spots.
Sorry, kid.
Get the fuck out of my face, kid. Because he's, like, riding a city bus. Because he's a latchkey kid. Talking to weirdos. Trying to get some attention. Getting the wrong kind of attention. Well, trying to think if we've covered everything I thought of while I was walking the dog this morning.
I wonder if meteorites are just space whale poop.
Some are. Those would be, well, okay. A coprolite is fossilized dinosaur poop. Or, you know, whatever creature. Fossilized poop.
Yeah.
So what would that be? An exocoprolite.
Ooh.
An alien poop.
Yeah. Alien petrified poop.
Well, yeah. Yeah, well,
petrified.
It's a space whale, so, like, the ite suffix just says that it's rock. So maybe they just excrete, you know, rock. Because they use their weird baleen to suck in... I don't remember. What is it? Oh, yeah. Atmospheric contaminants. So, yeah, that's mostly, like, geologic type material. Yeah, so they would poop rocks, yeah. Definitely.
Wow, I can't believe we pulled that one out.
I'm simply saying that life finds a way.
I think the coolest new job on the horizon is exoarchaeologist. You shoot yourself into space and you either look for relics of human space exploration, like go pick up the failed rovers and shit, take them back to the Smithsonian.
That'd be fun.
Or you look for evidence of alien civilizations. And that's awesome, too. And in the course of doing that, you'd have to cover so much ground that you just discover tons of shit. You probably have a million mountains named after you after a lifetime of doing that.
Yeah.
So I challenge the listener to come up with a cooler job than exoarchaeology.
Nope, I can't think of one.
Maybe you will. I was thinking for the song for today, we should do Andy Asteroids from Earthworm Jim.
Hell yeah.
Alright.
Six.